Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Protein's Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 80th episode. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure making these episodes. I'm pretty excited. This is number 80, getting closer and closer to episode 100. I'm sure we'll do a real celebration when that happens. Might take another year or so, but whatever. Anyways, we've been keeping busy over here. The world is opening up soon, and Massachusetts is not the exception. This is like the calm before the storm. I feel like I'm waiting to think about what I have wanted to do, and I'm more excited about that than actually what I'm going to be able to do differently in the next couple of weeks.
What?
Like, I don't know, going out to eat without worrying about stuff, you know, just like being out of the house more often, et cetera, et cetera. Don't get it twisted. We've been keeping real busy over here. I mean, aside from a big move, we've been moving our body differently. We started a skate gang, for example.
Don't call it a skate gang. I called it a skate gang as a joke, the middle-aged skate gang, because it's, I think the youngest person that's come out to do this is like 33 or 34, Giacomo being the oldest, gotta say it. But yeah, we've been going out and skating a few nights a week, Giacomo on his rollerblades and me on the roller skates that I got for Christmas that I hadn't really been able to use, and it is humbling to be a beginner at something. I haven't been a beginner at something like physical in a long, long time. Partially because like I'm somebody who gets really frustrated when I can't master something right away. You know, I'll try something for a little bit and I'll be like, I didn't want to do it anyway. Like that's kind of my attitude towards it. Roller skating looks like so much fun and I really do want to be able to do it. It is not an easy thing to learn. There's like a steep learning curve in the beginning and I have taken quite a few spills. Protective gear is your friend. But last night I was out skating by myself. I almost fell and I kind of caught myself and somehow I like threw my neck out, not falling. Maybe 35 is not the time to be learning how to roller skate, but I'm going to anyway.
Age is just a number. Honestly, I get so frustrated personally with those kinds of experiences when I'm learning something new or using old skills that I need to brush up on. Like I've rollerbladed before, but it's been a long time. Usually what happens to me, kind of similar to you, Danny, like I'm hesitant and I'm careful, but I want to go for something new. And I wind up being overly careful and tensing myself up, almost self-sabotaging before I learn something. But what's the alternative to just, I don't know, go for a jump and fall, for example? So it's like that in-between phase where you're learning and you're not sure what you're doing. And as a result, you wind up hurting yourself before you even try. Other stuff, we got to get you a tennis racket.
Get me a tennis racket.
I want to play tennis with you.
I'll try. I've never done it before.
We hit that one time. You don't remember?
I mean, that wasn't playing tennis though. Right?
Well, same thing.
Okay.
We got in a court. It was fun. Anyways, yeah, looking forward to relocating only, what, a couple blocks down the road?
Yeah, we're not moving far. We're moving, like, I don't know, it's a 10-minute walk from here, but it's a big move. It's a lot of stuff to move. We have, obviously, our own house stuff. We have the whole gym. And when we moved into this house, we had Vegan Proteins was still a store. So we moved the whole store here. Now we have all the Vegan Strong stuff here. Oh man, it is, packing is something, huh? But everything looks like it's going well for this house buying situation. Knock on wood, I don't wanna give us bad luck, but so far, so good. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully in the next month, we will be in there.
Anyway, moving on to what we're talking about today, macros, but specifically when tracking becomes something that disrupts your quality of life. At what point do you draw the line and say, okay, well, I need to track right now, but maybe I'm tracking a little bit too much, for example. It's something we've been thinking about for a while. I feel like it's an important skill to develop. It's important to know how to do it really well. And I think that, honestly, for everyone it's different, but I think it takes years of practice to be able to learn how to be really, really good at not only tracking, but tracking as a part of your lifestyle. I don't think there's anything wrong with developing that skill. I think that's totally normal and it makes sense to become efficient at it. Once you become really good at that though, I've said this before, I think it's important to take off the training wheels and trust yourself to be more intuitive. right? But then there becomes a point in time in the future where you're looking to change your body. And whenever you're looking to change your body, I think to some extent you can trust yourself to be able to make a change. And then eventually your instincts kick in, and at some point you need to throw tracking into the mix to be able to keep on moving toward a goal, whether it's mass gain, whether it's body fat loss, whether it's something in the middle where you're body recomping.
Yeah, I mean, the goal, you always have to think about what is the goal. The goal is not to track macros. Like, nobody sets out with a fitness goal or a physique goal and says, my goal is to track my macros. That's my long-term goal. Usually people's goal is to get in a certain kind of shape or a certain level of fitness, but they get so hung up on the means that of which they're doing that, which for many people is tracking their calories, tracking their macros, tracking what they eat, that they can become obsessed with it, actually, and it can be a whole new well to draw anxiety from and neuroses from. When we talk about flexible dieting in general, I think that it really is very helpful to kind of food freedom, if you will excuse that horrible terminology. It's so much better than a meal plan in so many ways. You don't have to eat specific foods to reach any goal. You can eat whatever foods you want as long as they fit within these parameters. And I do believe that. I think that there's so much value in testing it out and trying it for long enough to realize that it's not BS. You really can incorporate all kinds of foods, like no good or bad foods, to reach your goal. So I understand why people get so into it. And especially if you're doing some kind of shredding goal or competition prep, like, tracking your food is not negotiable. You have to do it. And you have to do it really well and not, like, you know, half-ass it. Mm-hmm. You really do have to do it well, but it's a means to an end. It isn't the be-all, end-all. But the problem is, a lot of people feel like they are slaves to tracking their macros. Like, they literally can't stop even though they want to. It can really be a huge disruptor to people's lives. In what ways can it disrupt people's lives, Giacomo?
When you don't realize how much of your headspace tracking is taking up, when you're thinking about what you need to track before you track it, when you're looking at your phone constantly thinking about how you can change the kinds of foods up so that you're hitting your goals to the gram, when you're starting to track things that you don't necessarily need to track. Put it this way, there are things that I think about because everything has calories in it, even, I don't know, spices, for example, or coffee, for another example. But I've gotten stage lean so many times over and have never tracked these things, never tracked them. And I think at some point you kind of have to think about, well, how much of these details when it comes to food choices and how you're flavoring your food up do you really need to worry about? I remember, for example, a tip here, a solution that Danny threw out there years ago when we were prepping, we did a prep together, and I remember you saying something like, well, just keep your condiments the same, right? Because if you're going to wind up heavily dousing your food with spices, not necessarily because you want more flavor, but because you're really hunting for calories and you're on an extreme diet for a prep, this is an extreme example, then just have the same amount of seasoning, season your food the same way every day, as opposed to actually trying to quantify it in terms of, oh, you know, I'm having 5 calories worth of spices today.
I'm having 1 sprinkle of onion powder. Is that a unit on MyFitnessPal? 1 sprinkle of onion powder?
Really?
But, you know, people do, as they go through a really serious cut or prep, they do start to load on things like spices or diet ketchup or eat a whole pack of sugar-free gum in a day, Giacomo. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, it was like a 1-pack-a-day limit.
Holy gastric distress, let me tell you. So I understand why people track these things when they have a very specific, very extreme goal. If you don't have a very specific or very extreme goal that you're close to, by the way, you can't, like, your goal is to get so lean that you can see lines in your glutes. Okay, you might need to track your ketchup, your diet ketchup at that point. You might need to track your gum because, yes, everything has calories, but you don't need to track all of the calories all of the time in every little breath mint Tic Tac that you eat. And when you start doing that, in my opinion, it is disordered. One could argue that bodybuilding diets are just eating disorder light, and I would 100,000,000% agree with that.
So it's like kind of a chicken and egg syndrome. What got you into bodybuilding is did it create the disorder, or did it feed the disorder that was already inside you to have the kind of neuroses to...
Oh, I have wondered that for years and years and years. Is it bodybuilding that breeds eating disorders, or is it people prone to eating disorders who are pulled towards bodybuilding? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's probably both, honestly. The difference between a bodybuilding prep and an eating disorder, or I should say one of the differences, right, is that in the bodybuilding prep, you are choosing to do these things. You have made a conscious, thoughtful decision. I am going to do this until I reach this goal, and then I'm going to back off, right? You have the power to keep doing it or to stop. Disordered eating, or, you know, an eating disorder, a lot of times people do want to stop and they can't stop. That's why I think it's so important that you keep these things in mind while you are dieting, that you're going to back off. You're going to back off. You have to back off the tracking eventually. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many people I've spoken to who are not even dieting. They're not even trying to diet, but they won't go out to dinner with their husband because they don't know how accurately they can possibly track the thing that they order off the menu. That is a disruption to your life. That is a huge disruption to your life, especially if you're not actively pursuing a really serious endeavor. There is no reason to not go out to dinner with your husband. And if tracking is part of your goal at the moment, estimate. Be honest with yourself and estimate how many calories and macros are in what you had. You might be wrong. You'll probably be off, but it's okay, because even nutrition labels are off all the time. Nutrition labels are off all the time. So this control that you think you have by tracking everything meticulously to the gram, you're kidding yourself. You're doing the best job that you possibly can, but it's not 100% accurate. So you need to let that idea that it's going to be 100% accurate go, because it's never going to be 100% accurate.
I feel like it's important to exert some control so you can have the variables be relatively consistent. At some point, though, I think it's important to let it go and trust that as long as you're eating in a similar way most of the time, and that you have a pretty firm grasp on how much you're getting in, as long as your goal isn't super duper extreme, like getting to an unsustainable place, right? Like getting stage lean, for example. Short of that, I don't think that it's helpful to be that meticulous with your tracking all the time.
Well, the thing is, it's not just that it's not helpful to be that meticulous all the time. After a certain point, it can actively become harmful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part that people don't talk about enough. You can get so obsessed with tracking your food that it actively harms your mental health. Mm-hmm. You can actively harm your physical self, especially if your macros that you're so hell-bent on tracking are wrong. If they're not enough for you and you're obsessed with hitting them, yeah, you can do some real physical damage there as well.
So this beckons the question, where's the happy place when you're trying to make a change, Danny? We have tracking to the umpteenth degree and we have being completely intuitive, right? And there's got to be a middle ground where you're still able to get pretty much any result that you want to get that is attainable.
Well, I think that's going to be different for everybody. Somebody who has already, you know, tracked their food on or off for years is going to be able to be more intuitive, because once you've tracked your food for a certain amount of time, you know what 20 grams of protein looks like on a plate. You just know. You have a rough idea how many calories are in your baked potato. You just know because you've tracked it for so long. So, you know, is it really intuitive or is it actually your knowledge coming into play? It's both. I like to call it informed intuitive eating rather than just intuitive eating. But the longer you have tracked, the more intuitive you're going to be able to be, because you're just going to know more. When you're newer to this, I think tracking can be a game changer. And I don't want to make it sound like I think tracking is a bad idea. I think tracking your food is something that everybody should do at some point or another in their life to get an idea of where they're at, because most people just don't know. They have no idea how much they're eating. They have no idea how much of anything they're getting. Carbs, protein, fat. They have no idea. They've never taken an inventory of how much fruits and vegetable do I get in a day. They have no idea. They don't know what correct portion sizes look like for them, and they won't until they start tracking their food. So I think tracking is wonderful. I just think that it can absolutely be taken too far. And when it happens, it's pretty ugly. It's very neurotic and it's very disruptive to someone's entire day. Someone could spend 30 minutes, you know, before every meal trying to figure out what they can eat and what they can Tetris into their specific macros that they can hit. That's really stressful to that person, not to mention a monumental waste of that person's time. Monumental waste of that person's time. Somebody could get really, really hung up over whether a cup of broccoli has 20 calories or 24 calories. The answer is, doesn't matter that much. It's broccoli. Eat it. Mm-hmm. You know, pick one. If it was me, even in prep, like I have certain entries that I just use over and over again. So I've already decided like, okay, this is how I'm going to track broccoli. This is how I'm going to track green beans, zucchini, etc. And I just repeat those as I have them throughout prep. But if I came across a bag of broccoli in the produce section that said it had slightly different calories than the broccoli the way I log it, I'm just going to log it the same way I always freaking log it, because it's broccoli. Because nutrition facts on produce in the produce section is a relatively new thing. And it throws some people off because one bag of sweet potatoes might say slightly different macros than another bag of sweet potatoes, but it's the same damn potato. But if you're getting so hung up on the differences between the nutrition facts on two different bags of the same kind of potato, probably have a little chat with yourself. You've probably taken this too far at that point.
I usually find different sources in the food database that I feel are reliable, and then I just stick with those food database sources. I don't look at the labels every time I shop anymore, which in my opinion is kind of freeing, even when I need to track. And to be clear here,
well, you're vegan, so you definitely look at all the food labels.
That's true.
Let's be real.
But not in the produce section, mostly. Yes. I also want to make the distinction that just because you're not quantifying calories, carbohydrates, and fats does not mean that you're not tracking.
Yeah, like I just said, like once you have a rough idea what food looks like, you just know. I have some clients that I've worked with for years, and sometimes they'll go on vacation and, you know, they're not going to track on vacation, especially if they're not like getting ready for a show. I'm not going to have somebody track their food on vacation while they're unless they're getting ready for a show. But they'll come back and they'll be like, yeah, I wasn't exact with my macros, but I didn't overeat or anything. Or I didn't undereat. I think I did pretty good with my calories, and I definitely was like thoughtful about getting protein in. Hallelujah. That's an enormous win on so many fronts. Somebody was able to go enjoy their vacation, relax, recover, recoup, whatever they're doing there. They were able to enjoy the food while they were on vacation. They were not stressing about a food scale or, you know, having access to MyFitnessPal while they're away. They were thoughtful about getting their protein in. So even if they didn't hit their exact protein macros, it's not a big deal if it's just a week. They can tell me with pretty fair certainty, I didn't overeat and I didn't really undereat. I think I ate about the right amount of food. Like they just know that because of their history of tracking before. But we always want to make sure that somebody doesn't get that vice grip on tracking. Like it's the be all end all. Like they're going to, you know, pray to the nutrition data, nutrition facts Bible every single night. Like, that's just not okay.
Mm-mm. And you can still reach your goals by tracking in other ways, right? You can say to yourself, okay, well, I'm going to have 4 cups of vegetables a day every day. And if one day I have a little more than that, that's fine. It's a food that is so voluminous that it doesn't really matter if you wind up having 4.5 cups or whatever. Plus, you're not worrying about quantifying it. So it just takes less mental energy, less prep as well to not have to weigh out your vegetables, for example. Same thing like what was mentioning earlier, just to circle back with seasoning your food. Just season your food the same way every day. for example. Now you're tracking without needing to actually get caught up with a whole bunch of numbers, right? It's just so much less to have to worry and think about, and you're still tracking. Well, those are just a couple of examples that we usually put into play. I think for a while you can eyeball stuff and still trust yourself. And I think it's a necessary skill for being able to travel, like Danny said, and also just when you're socializing on the weekend and eating out, hey, like, you should be able to eyeball your food and be like, okay, well, I'm probably eating this right now without having to whip out your phone and plug it in, for example, or have to think about it too much before the fact. So there are ways to plan for those kinds of scenarios without needing to rely on a food database and a calculator. I think that's really kind of the premise behind most of what we're talking about here in this episode is, you know, at what point is using a calculator and a food database and constantly scrutinizing that too much?
So going back to what I was saying before about the nutrition labels, you know, a lot of people really get hung up on the nutrition labels, like a lot. In the United States, nutrition labels are actually allowed to be off by up to 20%. And that's not just calories, that's also macros. That's a huge variance. That's a huge variance, especially if it's something that you eat all the time. Mm-hmm. Let's say something says that it has 200 calories. Well, it could have 160 or it could have 240. Something that says that it has 20 grams of protein could have 16 or it could have 24. And all of them would be well within their rights to do that on a nutrition label. Again, this is not to say don't track, because I think it's the best way to measure that we have, right? Like, it's the best way to measure what we have, and what you don't measure, you can't manage. So I definitely think tracking your food per the nutrition labels is a very smart thing to do. But also still get real with yourself that the numbers that you hit at the end of the day, they are, even if you think you nailed it to the gram, I promise you, you didn't. And that's okay. That's okay. If you get in the ballpark of where you're supposed to be and be honest with yourself throughout the day and make sure that you're tracking to the best of your ability, then it's fine. You know, I always give my clients a margin of error of, you know, 100 calories, even during prep. Like, this is even during prep, 100 calories, so plus or minus 50 calories, plus or minus 5 grams of carbs, 5 grams of protein, and plus or minus 3 grams of fat. If you fell in those windows, you were compliant. You nailed it. Excellent work. But if you're stressing out over going over your macros because you accidentally had 3 cups of asparagus and you thought you had 2 cups of asparagus, you are harming yourself. This is a form of self-harm. That sounds like really strong language, but having seen it up close many times, it is a form of self-harm. There is no benefit that comes from that kind of thinking.
Right. Or a fluffier way to say it is self-sabotage, if self-harm is something that is scary to think about. In all actuality, though, yeah, it's hurting you. Mm-hmm. It's hurting you to do that, and it's actually causing you to move in the wrong direction, because at some point, it will derail you from making the right moves and the right decisions for your body composition goals.
If you feel like you might be tracking too meticulously, if you feel like you're obsessed with hitting your numbers, or if you feel like the idea of even plugging in your food gives you a tremendous amount of anxiety, like it's going to trigger some kind of neurosis or anything like that, I think it's worth talking to a mental health professional about that. I think it would be really, really smart to talk to a mental health professional about that, because it could, I am not diagnosing anybody, okay? But it could be what we talk about often on here. It could be like an eating disorder situation or disordered eating going on. It could be some obsessive compulsiveness going on. And, you know, all of these things have a big spectrum, but they're all going to impede upon your life day to day. And it's important. We want the best for you guys. We want you to hit your goals. We want you to look and feel exactly the way you want to feel. We want you to be able to eat food that you love while you're doing it. But we also want you to have fulfilling, rich relationships in your life and have mental clarity and happiness. We want all of those things for you. Getting to a physique goal is like walking a tightrope, and there are pitfalls everywhere along that road. We're just looking out. So if you noticed any of these red flags about yourself, consider reaching out to a mental health professional, because, you know, the sooner you catch it, the better off you're going to be. The longer you let these habits go, the harder they're going to be to break.
And I feel like regardless, the more extreme your goal is, no matter how successful you are at getting there, the more you're going to have to focus on your mental health afterwards to get back to a state of balance.
I agree.
This question is from a gentleman. This year, I have gone from 32% to 19% body fat, and now I feel stuck. My body fat reduction has slowed to a crawl, and I'm not sure why. I'm eating really well, lifting 4 times a week, and running 2 times a week.
Eating really well, lifting 4 times a week, running 2 times a week. And you reduced your body fat from 32% to 19% in a year? That's amazing. Does he say this year or in a year? This year. No, this year I have gone from 32% to 19%. That is a massive change in 5 months. So first of all, congratulations. That's amazing that you were able to do that. Every single diet is going to start faster than it ends. It's like the opposite of a snowball effect. You know, snowballs pick up speed as they're going downhill. Okay, well, diets do the opposite thing. They slow down as you keep going, and that's normal. You are a smaller person, therefore you are burning fewer calories. Just bigger bodies burn more calories. So if you're still eating about the same amount that you were eating at the start of the diet, you might just need to tick that down a little bit, because eating really well is awesome. I take that to mean I'm eating a lot of very health promoting foods, but it doesn't tell me anything about the amount of those things. And you can absolutely eat in a surplus eating really, really healthy foods, or you could be eating at maintenance with really, really healthy foods. The only way to continue to reduce body fat or drop weight is to go into a caloric deficit, which means, you know, inventory yourself, see how much you're eating, and then maybe shave a little bit off of that. The biggest thing is like, be nice to yourself, because that's a huge, huge change in a really short period of time. The changes from here on out, they're going to happen slower. Also, 19% is not like a terrible number, just so you know. A couple years ago, Giacomo got his body fat tested on a DEXA scan, and it was 16%, right? Mm-hmm. And Giacomo looked pretty dang good, I think. I mean, 19, it might be a little bit higher than you want it to be, but a lot of people have really unrealistic expectations of what they can get their body fat to. We did a whole podcast about body fat percentage and what's realistic and does it matter. But you can keep going. It's going to slow down. That's normal. Probably decrease your intake just a little bit. Keep doing what you're doing, because it's obviously working. Okay, this question is for Giacomo. How do you stay motivated enough to work out every day? I have to lose at least 50 pounds by the end of the year, and it's tough to work out every day.
It is tough to work out every day. It's tough to work out every day for anyone. It's an unrealistic expectation to think that you'll be able to, or even should, train every day. Let's start with that. The truth is that when we're ready to make a change, especially when it's a goal, like we're looking at the finish line and we're excited about starting, when that's the thought process, we tend to say, okay, how much can we possibly do right now? But the reality of it is that's just not sustainable, and it's not even realistic. I always recommend starting off with fewer days worth of exercise, lighter goals, and then you work your way up to be able to do more. And even professional athletes don't train every day. Like professional athletes who their only job is for them to train themselves. They have to do nothing else. Nothing else, but they need to train themselves and they need to recover themselves. Nothing more. They don't train every day. So yeah, I feel like a realistic goal is to think about how many days you think you can train and then shave off 1 or 2. So for most people, when they approach us, they're like, yeah, I could train 6 days a week or 5 days a week. I'm like, great. Let's start with 3 days a week or 4 days a week. And the other days, hey, if you're jonesing for it and you are able and interested in moving your body, then you can focus on active recovery, or you can move in a way that isn't fatiguing. Now you'll be focusing on recovering from your workouts and you'll be able to continue to encourage your body to move by creating the option to say, go on a 20-minute walk or go on an hour walk. You can get 10,000 steps on an hour and 15-minute walk.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
No, you can't.
How long does it take you to get 10,000 steps in?
About 100 minutes. I get about 1,000 steps every 10 minutes.
Google, you lied to me. Okay, well,
talk to somebody who actually tracks their steps. I will tell you exactly how long. I mean, if you really, really hoof it, maybe you can get 1,000 in 9 minutes, but...
Okay, so 45-minute walk, you can get 5,000 steps in.
Yeah.
That's...
It's possible. Mm-hmm.
Possible. You go on a 45-minute walk, you're not going to fatigue yourself. You are going to burn calories. You're going to increase that non-exercise burn. And you're going to get to move your body, like maybe get the creative juices flowing. I have my best conversations with myself and with other people when I go on walks. And if there's one thing that your body is meant to do for the entirety of its life, it's walk.
Yeah. And if your goal is to lose 50 pounds, you don't have to do that just by exercise. It's only done by creating a caloric deficit, which can be done by exercise and controlling the amount of calories that you intake. If you don't want to just like exercise around the clock, I would absolutely recommend that you pair exercise with the diet. You're going to get much better results and you're going to feel less fatigued as well.
Yes. So as overwhelming as it can be to say, hey, I need to lose 50 pounds by the end of the year, break it down into smaller goals. Break it down into, say, 2 to 4 goals over the course of a year. And don't even make those be like, hey, I need to lose 10 pounds in 3 months. Be like, I'd like to lose up to 10 pounds in 3 months, and I'm going to check in with myself in 3 months. Now it's a smaller micro goal that is more attainable, and you can keep moving toward that 50-pound goal. And like Danny said, focus on nutrition and leave the option to move your body every day without thinking that you have to beat your body up every day with training.
All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. Please come over and join our Facebook group, Muscles by Brussels Radio. We would love to have you. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and you can email us at veganproteins@gmail.com. If you have any questions, we would love to have them featured on the podcast. Thanks again so much for tuning in. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we'll talk to you soon.